You may not recognize my voice if you're a frequent listener of the Rising Above podcast, but I serve as the media and marketing manager at Rising Above, and I wanted to tell you just a little bit about our episode today. Well, last week our episode was on hospital visits, and this past week, Becky, president of Rising Above and our usual host, experienced an unexpected hospital stay with her son, John Alex. Thankfully, she was well prepared. We would love for you to please keep them in your prayers as he continues to recover, and if you haven't listened to last week's episode, check it out for lots of practical tips on hospital stays with your adult child with special needs, especially during a COVID-19 pandemic. Our interview today is a conversation Becky had a couple weeks ago with Eric and Candy Nixon. Eric was actually a friend of Becky's late husband, Jeff, and through that friendship, Eric and his wife, Candy, have become friends and encouragers of Rising Above Ministries. Eric and Candy have walked through life with medically fragile children, and additionally, Eric shares about his journey with an MS diagnosis. Eric knows the importance of having friendships with other men who get it, and he and Candy have stayed committed to their marriage vows through the ups and downs of life. You will love hearing the wisdom they have to share. Enjoy hearing from the Nixons.
Hey, Eric and Candy, thank you guys so much for joining us for the Rising Above podcast. I am so excited for this conversation and for people to get to know more about you all and your heart. And you are two of my most favorite people in the world, and I'm just honored to get to have this conversation with you. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you.
Now, Eric, you and I have known each other. I've never actually met you face-to-face. We've done several Zooms and had lots of phone calls. But goodness, for several years, because you were friends with my husband, Jeff. Mm-hmm. And I've known you all through that. And you were always such an encourager to Jeff, and just would always know just at the right moment when to text him and say hello to him and just check on him. And you were also very instrumental in helping us complete his book after his death, Common Man, Extraordinary Call. And just having your input, helping your story is told in one of the chapters, along with you helped write the study guide. Yes. So if anybody's been to that book and done the study guide that goes along with the book, that was Eric who wrote that for us. And so I'm very grateful for that. And then Candy, I've kind of gotten to know you a little bit since COVID, actually. Yeah. We've had some conversations, and so I am grateful that you all are part of our life. And as we get started, you know, I actually just even reading your bio, I've known you, but I learned a lot of new things just reading the bio that you sent me. And so I would love for you to share just a little bit about your family and how you all are special needs parents, how that was part of your journey when you were raising your children. And so share a little bit about your children, your life, whatever you want to share with us today.
So I think important in my background, Becky, is that I have a degree in special education. And then I worked in the field of early intervention, serving families with special needs from birth to three for about 8 years before our children were born.
Oh, wow.
And so my brain kind of knows that child development phase pretty well.
Right.
So when we were blessed with our three children, I remember the first doctor coming up to me and holding my hand and kind of patting it and saying, "You're just a first-time mom. It's all fine. Don't worry about it." But I knew that things weren't progressing and going the way that they should, mm-hmm, developmentally or normally. And so I questioned all of that. So to go back, we have three children that are just about 3 years apart from each other. They all presented with very typical illnesses that people would think, no big deal. So sinus infections and bronchitis and pneumonias, but they never rebounded to stay healthy. So they would be on antibiotics and then they would get sick again. within a week of going off of those antibiotics. And so it was a vicious cycle of always needing more treatment, always more hospitalizations, more specialists, more experimental surgeries, more delays in early development of language skills because they weren't hearing right and weren't having good input. So speech was delayed, among many other things. So when our eldest son was 11, we finally obtained an appointment at CHOP with an immunologist, and this was 11 years of hard-fought specialist.
After specialist. And then more specialists on top of that.
And I pleaded with them because they only see two siblings at a time, and we have three. And I said, really, all three of our kids are exactly the same. Please, please, please take all three of them at the same time. Plus, I had this massive fear of driving in the city. So I only wanted to do it once and be done with it. Little did I know my car would know how to automatically drive back and forth from Philly back now. But the ironic of all of that is that our youngest was very, very sick right before that appointment and rushed back to the doctor's office the night before. And they were like, you can't go home. You're going to need to go to the hospital.
No,
you can't. We can't do this. We have this appointment in Philadelphia tomorrow and we need to be there. And they're like, no, you can't go. And so Eric stepped in. He took the two older kids. I was in the hospital with the younger one. And basically, it was such a God orchestrated thing, Becky, because our youngest son had counts that were so low that he would have probably died at that point if he wasn't intervened in the hospital. So long story short is all three of our children were diagnosed with a primary immune deficiency disease called common variable immune deficiency disease, which basically they just don't make antibodies to keep themselves healthy. Mm. And so they have to be replaced all the time. So they were constantly sick. And so we went through many different styles, if you will, of therapy to try and get them healthy and to be able to help them stay in school. Mm. And as I said earlier, they had some learning delays. So definitely IEPs put in place to help them with early learning and whatnot. At that point, they were 11, 9, and 5 when they were all diagnosed. And I had just started back to work part-time, stepping in at our church, working in our as our children's ministry administrator. So long story short, within that year, they moved me up to the children's ministry director. So the following year, I was planning for a vacation Bible school for about 300 kids, and Eric ran security for me. That was his big guy job. And so I had called him throughout the day and nobody answered the phone. And that's very unlike him. We would at least touch base once during the day. And I was worried, but obviously very busy with stuff on my mind to do. And so he finally called me right after we prayed before all the kids started coming in the door and was like, I'm on my way home, but it hasn't been a typical day and I can't see real good. And I said, in a typical Eric way, I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm driving.
Right.
And I said, how can you see? And he said, well, I cover one eye and I steer with the other hand and try and see out of it. And I said, so what do you see? He said, I see top to bottom, double of everything.
Yeah, doing 70 on the highway with one eye. I made it home safe. Went to the eye doctor, and he immediately said, I think your husband's having a stroke. Oh, and they sent me right to the ER. Turns out it wasn't a stroke. It was MS, multiple sclerosis.
At that point, you know, there was humor throughout the hospital visit. There's the only way that Eric and I have kind of survived and made it through all of this is Eric's humor. Mm. It's not my humor. It's definitely his own style of humor. But we wouldn't have made it without it. I remember that night at the hospital, we hadn't eaten dinner and the nurse had come up to Eric and said, "You must be so hungry." And he goes, "Yeah, I'm really hungry." She's like, "I think we have some sandwiches back down in the refrigerator." And she went down to get him a sandwich brought back. And he picked it up with his right hand because he's right-handed, and he proceeded to put it in his ear.
Yes, you heard that right. My ear, I had no capability of aiming my hand straight at my mouth.
And even the nurse was busting up laughing, and she realized what was going on. She was like, "Okay, put it down, try it with your left hand." And then he was fine. But that was kind of the beginning of that story. But as Eric began that diagnosis, that MS diagnosis, I remember looking at God and going, "You're crazy."
Yeah.
No. You know, I have three kids right now with serious illnesses that are getting infusions at the hospital to begin with, and then we moved into our home. So now my home looks like a hospital. Now my husband has MS and we're treating him at home and he's not able to work. And I surely thought the Lord had plate sizes mixed up, because even, you know, I was real good with a dessert plate, you know, one of those little small plates. But, you know, even moving into a dinner plate with the kids being diagnosed, I was like, "Okay, God, you've got this and I'll follow." But man, I was feeling like this was a Thanksgiving platter in front of me. Right. And I had no idea how we were going to make it.
And, you know, as I'm hearing you tell your story, it obviously makes me go back to my experience. Now, granted, I didn't have three children, but I had one child with profound special needs. And then my husband starts getting sick, and becoming, you know, the caregiver to both my child and my husband. And I'm sure, Candy, there were times you were doing lots of caregiving for Eric when he needed it, for your children when you needed it. And if you haven't been through that, there's really no way to explain the pressure and the amount of weight that is on the shoulders of the one doing all the caregiving, trying to juggle all that's going on. What was going through your mind, Candy, as you're looking at the situation of, I have these three children whose needs are so high. Now I have my husband who needs, I'm going to be having to help on over here too. He's going to need help. What was going through your mind, you know, other than the different plate sizes and God had that all wrong, but how were you coping at that point?
Moment by moment, you know, and I would love to say that it's veered way off and my trust is much greater these days, but I still say I'm moment by moment. You know, I was thinking before our call, what was the one verse that I kind of cling to? And I don't mean to be trite at all, but be still and know I am God. Mm-hmm. Because I just needed my mind to stop and to just remember that he was in control and I wasn't. And so between the collaboration of nurses and meds coming in and doctor phone calls and medications that needed to come at certain times, all the things that I needed to organize and have control of, I needed to remember that he was ultimately in control of everything.
So Eric, what about you? I mean, I know, like with Jeff, he had moments that were really low and then moments that he would kind of rise above it. How did you respond? You know, here you are, you're the dad, you're the husband, you're the provider. And now all of a sudden, you know, you've got your children who have these needs going on. And then all of a sudden, now you've got a diagnosis. What was your response?
Oh, I was just happy singing all day long. No. Whenever you get a diagnosis, that initial shock. But I knew that multiple sclerosis wasn't a death sentence. But I really didn't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. I thought, like lots and lots of people, going to church, which I've done all my life and continue to do, I thought church would be the greatest support network because that's what it's there for. And I found out inadvertently that many people inadvertently and honestly did not know that they were Job's comforters, trying to give me all this scripture when my world's falling apart.
Yes.
I punched holes in walls mm-hmm. at home. I didn't go to church for 6 months.
Yeah.
I was so mad at God. People would say to me, honestly, your wife's the pastor, so she didn't sin. So what do you want to repent of? Wow. And it was questions like that that I was like, you guys have known me for, you know, in my men's group, like you've known me for 10 years. When have you ever known that I, you know, that's why I'm in a men's group. I struggled with church. I struggled with why a loving God would allow a Christian family, no matter how many times you go through a disability, you want to blame somebody.
Right.
And I kept asking the same question, why? The unfortunate part about asking the word why is you're demanding answers from God. Mm-hmm. And I changed that thought and said, what am I supposed to learn from this? Mm-hmm. And that puts me in a mode to listen and to seek God instead of question God.
Yeah.
That was one of my, I have lots of things that helped me, but that's just one of them.
And I think in the very beginning, Becky, when the kids were first diagnosed, that's one of the things that we said with the children. We want to use this experience, however, God can use it to encourage other people. Mm-hmm. We said that to them from right in the beginning. And so there were a lot of people that we met along our path, and a lot of nurses that we met along our path, and doctors that we were able to share faith with and just share encouragement and hope with. That I all believe were God ordained moments. But for Eric to be able to internalize that for himself and to see that and use that for himself was a totally different thing.
And as men, we're wired to want to fix things. Right. Our wife comes to us with a bad day and she wants to vent. And we try and fix it. I couldn't fix my MS. I couldn't fix my illness. I couldn't fix my kids, which just further added to my anger. Mm-hmm. I've always had somewhat of a short fuse. It went from short to non-existent. Mm-hmm. My family, and unfortunately my wife, had to walk around on eggshells.
I think that in a marriage, you know, in those times, you have to remember who the person is, not what's going on at that time. I always remember early on in our marriage, we were at a conference and they said, write down all the things that you love about your husband so that when you're in a fight, you can pull it out and
go back and take it down there.
And it's kind of funny, but in those moments where he was always so angry, it was things like that that I needed to remember, all those things that I loved about him, because what I was saying was not
It's not him.
Exactly. Right.
And so that was truly a challenge. And this wasn't a short journey. It was about 3 to 5 years that he really, really wrestled with God. And I would look at him and be like, but you get to be home and you're with our children when they're home and all the things that I had dreamed of, because, you know, I wanted.
You ended up having to switch roles. I
mean, right. Like, yes.
Right. A complete role reversal. So I'm working full time. Managing our children's ministry as pastor to children and their families. And I wanted to be home with our kids. And I remember going, why aren't you happy? Mm-hmm. But being like, I needed to look at it from a different perspective.
I needed to put
my feet in his shoes,
right,
and think about what it was like for him to not be the breadwinner of the family anymore, and what that meant to him as a man, and how that changed the perspective of things.
But women tend to be naturally more emotionally connected and kinder with children. Men get their self-worth a lot of times from their job.
Absolutely.
And when I couldn't do my job, and then our roles changed. Mm-hmm. Even my close friends made little jabs like, oh, okay, now you're a dad mom. Mm. Do you wear the apron all day long? And I knew that they were just good-natured humor, but it was humor I couldn't handle. Absolutely. At the time.
Not what you were needing at that moment.
Right. Later on in my journey, someone brought to my attention in the book of John, chapter 9, verse 1 through 4, Jesus saw a man from birth. His disciples asked, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, causing him to be blind? Jesus said, you're asking the wrong question. You're looking for someone to blame. In this case, it does not apply here. Look instead to God. Mm-hmm. And that helped me to wrap my head around the fact that I didn't do something wrong. One of the things that I needed in my journey was other men who understood endless doctor's appointments, yeah, endless medical bills. I went to a group that offered it, and there were two people there. And they had been doing it for a year, and only two people came. And my wife said to me, why don't you lead that group? And I laughed hysterically. I'm like, what? I'm the one who needs encouragement. I needed other guys to say, I've been there, and I know what you're going through, mm-hmm, and it sucks.
Yeah.
But it was different from people at church who were trying to fix me or get me to repent of something. I had people say, listen, you just need to have faith. You need, yeah, to go to a faith healer. Mm-hmm. And your MS will be gone tomorrow. It took me a long, 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 long time to utter the words, thank you, God, for disabilities in our family.
Would you say that was a turning point for you when you were able to say that, when you were able to look at it?
Yes.
I know for us, when we were able to embrace John Alex as created beautifully by God, just the way that he was, that we it's almost like it was a moment of, it is well with my soul. All, yes, of a sudden, just like this peace just comes over you. So would you say for you in that moment of just getting to that place of acceptance and being able to see this as, okay, this is God's plan for us, was that a turning point for you in your walk?
I'd like to say that was the only turning point.
Yeah, there's lots of turning points on,
right,
this journey.
And unfortunately, there are. But that was probably, yeah, the most noticeable one, mm-hmm, where I knew that there were hundreds of people out in my local community with disabilities, and why weren't these dads coming?
Yeah.
And I called it a support group, and then a Bible study, and that just shut guys off.
Is that right?
And right, put it up an invisible wall, because what I realized is that they had been burned at churches too, at different denominations, and they just wanted to go somewhere and have some food and fellowship and not have, and sometimes at the beginning of when we met as men's groups, as spiritual as we got, is we said grace.
Right.
And then as it progressed, I started asking for prayer requests at the end. But the guys needed time to heal the same way I did. I'm saying that as much as I am a leader that way, I needed all their support as much as they needed mine. And it gave me that purpose of, wow, through my disease, I can help other people. Because in my frustration and anger, I couldn't see how anybody could benefit from it.
Right. And how now, I've seen you now all these years later, and you're encouraging other people, you're leading other men, you're helping them walk through that. But here's the thing, had you not been through,
correct,
what you've been through, there is no way that you would be able to speak into the lives of these men and Candy into the people, the families that you serve, had you not walked this walk, as hard as it's been.
And my background is different. I didn't grow up with special needs. I knew one person who had Down syndrome when I was in high school. So disability ministries did not come easy to me. But I realized that there is a great harvest field of people who've been burned by churches or are just angry with God.
Right.
How come I can't do this or that? I may never get to see my child get married or play sports or
the grief of all the
grieving.
Yeah.
And I got stuck in that mode for a long time.
Right. But then you found ways to move beyond it. And I think, you know, we all encounter that in this journey. There's different moments, different things that we're going to grieve throughout. And then you, Eric, just with your diagnosis, having to grieve those things maybe that you physically weren't able to do. You're, you know, going to work, things like that, where you had those roles had to shift. But you all, instead of getting stuck there, you may have gotten stuck there for a little bit, but you made that choice to move beyond that.
Right.
And then not only to move beyond it, but to use your story and your experiences to help other people. And to me, that's when the true healing comes.
Yes.
Is when
I kept thinking I needed some magical conversion. I needed to have some magical, great story to tell people. And I was like, I'm just like everybody else. I'm trying to survive.
Right.
And I realized that my simple testimony, my simple life can still help people.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that helped me tremendously was reading a short article. A lady wrote to Mother Teresa and said, I want to come to Calcutta to serve the poor with you. And while Mother Teresa was alive, she wrote her back and said, thank you, but no. Stay and serve the poor in your neighborhood. That's your Calcutta.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always thought missionaries and stuff like that only could go overseas. But really, my Calcutta is people in my neighborhood, in my community, who have disabilities mm-hmm. or are affected by it.
And then you serve those people there, which you've all have done beautifully. But, and you know, that's part of them bringing you that purpose in the pain of seeing,
yes.
you know, through my pain, through what I've gone through, I'm then going to take that and use it to love and serve others. And you all
right.
have both done that beautifully well. And I think for me and my story, that's one of the main reasons I find joy every day is when we get to pour into other families who are struggling and go, you know, now that we're further down the path, you know, to be able to help those moms and dads who were just getting a new diagnosis, who were dealing with
yes.
all that fear and worry and anger, and to help them process through. And
right.
so I, you all have done a beautiful job of that. Now, you've been married 30 years, which congratulations, that is huge. You know, especially in light of all that you've been through to still be able to sit here and say, we've been married 30 years. And I would love to know, what are some things that you all have put into your marriage that you would say this is what's helped us through all these trials, all these things that we've encountered? When we wanted to quit, when we wanted to throw in the towel, that we said, no, we're going to stay the course. What would you say?
Well, I think one of the first things, probably before we even knew anything, was about to happen, was that my background or my story is from a divorced family. And so walking into our marriage, we kind of made that the D word wasn't a word that we were going to talk about.
And the D word being divorce.
Yeah.
Right.
And then when I worked in early intervention, I would constantly come home heartbroken over stories of dads that chose that they needed to leave their families because they couldn't handle the diagnosis that their child had been given.
They couldn't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And so Eric and I often lamented over that and prayed for those families and wanted to help them, you know, through prayer, if nothing else, And so then when we found ourselves in those steps as well, prayer became our go-to in a moment-by-moment kind of way. I think making, and this sounds again so simple, but making certain decisions, like not talking about divorce, but talking about moving forward and what are ways that can bring joy or healing, not going to bed angry at each other, because we all know what days of medical care are like and how that takes a toll on people. Being there in very simple ways, maybe that's just bringing your spouse a cup of coffee in the morning as an act of kindness, in the midst of so much that just feels so weighty, just trying to move one of those weights over and trying to lighten the load for them. I'm sure many of you have heard of the five love languages,
right?
And Jolene Filo's book for special needs parents with in sharing love abundantly. But I think that Eric and I often joke, we've had the chance to talk to Jolene about that book, but you know, in the beginning we kind of pegged our love languages as this is what they are. And
mine stayed the same, but my wife's did not. So when I kept giving her the same gift and it wasn't working, that anger came back.
So, but I think the simple thing of knowing, you know, what really speaks to your
spouse. Right, what speaks to you, right. Yeah.
And how can you feed that into their soul?
Right.
That's huge. And I think so many times the world looks at us and says, if you fix this, it has to be fixed in the right way and in a big way and in the perfect way. And I think in our marriage, we don't always know what the fix may look like, but we need to take the steps to move towards that fix and to use the tools that God has given us to be able to bring it to completion. So, you know, I mentioned humor earlier, but that was a huge fix for us.
Yeah.
In the midst of things being so weighty, sometimes I would, if we could get a good belly laugh in when things felt like they were falling apart, there was some healing in that.
Absolutely.
I remember Jeff sharing one time, he had spoken at a church network meeting for me one time, Becky, and he was sharing about his Mount Sinai and his one place where he would just go out and be with God. And I was thinking, man, I love that idea. And, you know, so for some nights, when the weather isn't in the 20s here in Pennsylvania, Eric and I would go out, and that Mount Sinai became, you know, for us, was sitting out on the deck at night
with a blanket on
after right. everything was quiet and having a cup of tea together and right. just trying to decompose in some way. Yeah. And I know the people that are listening to this are in all different stages of life. So I know when your kids are little, you're thinking a cup of tea, there's no way
I can step outside for 5 minutes, Brian.
Right, exactly. Right. And I get that. So all the stages of our life look different, you know, and when the kids were really young, maybe that was, Eric's a really great note writer, so sometimes he would just write me a sentence or two on a card and leave it laying around. And I'm not a card person, so it means more to me that he took the time to write it down on a 3x5 card or whatever.
Now I know why you and Jeff were such good friends, because Jeff did the same thing. He did the same thing. He'd leave little notes for me or John Alex. And, you know, what's been so sweet is now with him being gone, I have those. I didn't really
Yeah,
I still have those. And so, Eric, what would you say?
I'd say not giving up on God. We, in the deepest, darkest hurt, other than the 6 months that I didn't go to church, way at the beginning of my diagnosis, I needed people and I needed God. I don't really know how people go through disabilities without knowing God. It was listening to Christian music, knowing that God put us together as a couple, and knowing the fact in my wedding vow that I said, through better or for worse.
Yes.
when you say those words when you're young and dumb,
you have no idea.
Then when the rubber really hits the road, I really didn't want to leave. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to, but I couldn't fix my anger. And that really almost destroyed us more than the disability did.
You were grieving and stuck at that process in the grief process of anger, right?
And I needed somebody to help me through that process who had been there and done that.
Yeah. And I think, Eric, that takes us back to, you know, the importance of community and where you were talking about your men's group. And it sounds like that was almost a turning point for you when you found people that you could connect with, other men who understood the disability life and understood what was going on in your life, that was almost like a turning point. I think, you know, we all want to feel like we are seen and we are heard and someone gets our life. And quite frankly, people outside of our world, the disability world, they can't understand it if they're not walking. Just like I'm not going to understand their life. But I think that goes back to that importance of finding those people that you can be in community with who understand, and you just feel acknowledged that how you're feeling is not wrong and how you're feeling is not bad, but you just may need help processing through that. So I think that's, you saw that early on and now are just continuing that on even all these years later.
You know, when you give a gift, and it's a gift that you really thought through and really means something to the other person, you get more joy out of giving a gift sometimes than receiving one. Mm-hmm. I'd always heard that, but I didn't really believe it for disability ministries.
Right.
But seeing the joy that you're able to help another person or another family really does help to encourage you to know that you're doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that people with disabilities need to be part of a church, but how do you make that work?
Right.
We had to educate our staff, and they did a great job, and still do a great job. But it was because of our journey that we were just able to help other people.
Yeah. And pour into other people. And that's part of one of the things that I love about you all is that you're just some of the best encouragers I know out there. And, you know, even when we've been going through this recent health issues with John Alex, you guys have been texting me, just saying, we're praying, we see you. And, you know, sometimes it's just as simple as that. Taking the time to send someone a text to know that they are seen and valued and loved. And I would love for us to talk just a minute about, you know, you talked about early on when you got your MS diagnosis that you had all these people saying not the best things to you, things that were not helpful. And, you know, we were the same way when it came to John Alex. You know, well, you must, you know, have sin in your life. Or if you just had just a little bit more faith, you know,
all it takes is faith of a mustard seed, Eric. Yeah. How hard is that?
Yeah, exactly. And we've heard all that. And then, you know, when Jeff passed away, people don't know what to say when you're grieving. And I had some of the most kindly insensitive things said, you know, but let's help people. What would have been helpful for you? I was in the exact same boat when you were talking about, I think people think giving someone a scripture is just what they need. That was the one thing that turned me off more than anything, because I was so mad and so angry and so hurt. And it's like, I don't need that right now.
It's the right medicine given at the wrong time.
Absolutely. That's the best way to put that.
Yeah. Many times, individuals and caregivers don't really know what they need, and they're afraid to ask. They really could use somebody to give them a break for an hour, so they could just leave the house and go get a cup of coffee by themselves or with their spouse. running errands for people, cleaning houses, doing a load of laundry, making a meal. Mm-hmm. You're so exhausted as a caregiver. For a while, we said no to the people. And then it dawned on me that we're robbing somebody of a blessing.
Yeah.
Who wanted to do something like make a meal. And we said, no, you know, we're good because our pride got in the way.
I love it in Diane DeCoto's book, Unbroken Faith, Becky, she has a really simple list in there that you can either use at your church or in a small group of just things like Eric just mentioned. Mm-hmm. But so going back to the simple, sometimes the things are so simple that people don't think that they're important enough. Mm-hmm. It's those simple things that are the most important. And it is that point where I am beyond exhausted, beyond whatever, that I don't even know how to answer your question.
We didn't even know what we needed.
Yeah, you don't know what you need.
If you walk in my house with a bag of groceries, I'm going to fall at your feet crying. Absolutely. Because you met a need that I probably didn't even know I had. You know, you took my garbage out, so I didn't need to haul it out at the end of the day. You are such a blessing to mm-hmm. me. I think, you know, going back to our special needs families, they're just like everybody else. They want to be loved. They want to be seen. They want to be celebrated. And so any of the ways that we step into their lives to help that happen and to help their families be able to make that happen mm-hmm. just resonates the love that can be there in a beautiful way.
And you don't have to know what to say. That's the thing. You know, so often it was the people who were just there.
Yeah.
Did those things like take the trash down, bring food. You don't have to have the right word to say. Sometimes just not saying anything is the most kind thing that you can
and
do.
And sometimes just sitting with me.
Yes.
You don't need to. I remember doing this for one of my other dear friends, but sometimes just making that long trek down to Children's Hospital, just sitting in the car with them. Absolutely. Just so that they're not doing it alone. Yes. One more time.
Yes.
You know, what a blessing that is. And if you can't do that, then somebody reaching out with a gas card, you know, helping to pay for the gas going back and forth to the hospital all the time. It doesn't have to be words, because words so often can be hurtful.
Absolutely.
And we don't mean to hurt.
Another thing that we got as we progressed further in our marriage and understanding disabilities was a wagon wheel. Think of an old-fashioned covered wagon going out west. In the center was us, but those spokes going out are people, somebody to help you with medical, somebody to help you with cleaning, somebody to help you with yard work. Who are those support people who really are there when you need it?
And I think being okay knowing who you are in your marriage. So I'm not really good at asking because I love to do. Mm. So I love to bless those other people. But for me to ask is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. But Eric's okay with asking. And I needed to get to the point to be okay with having him ask when we needed help mm-hmm. and being okay with receiving.
Right.
As I mentioned early before, you're taking that blessing away from somebody else when you're not allowing them to give.
Yeah.
And so know where you are. It's okay. You know, it doesn't have to be the spouse, you know, the husband does this or the wife does this.
Right.
What is your gift? Where do you sit the most comfortably that you can support one another?
Yeah. And I love that wagon wheel picture, Eric, because that's so true. And to know who you go to and be willing to go to those people for different things. I think
right.
I think it's the willingness to be able to accept is, like you said, Candy, that's so hard, but it does take someone's blessing away when we are not open to doing that. So,
yeah.
Eric and Candy, thank you all so much for your willingness to share your story with us. You all have a phenomenal story, and I love how you have allowed God to take your story and to use it for his good. because the fruit is evident every time I talk to you and see you. Mm-hmm. So thank you all so much for the legacy in your life.
Sweet. Thank you, Becky.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Rising Above Ministries podcast. If you like what you hear, please take a minute to leave us a rating and review. This helps others like you find our content more easily. You can learn more about how Rising Above Ministries is encouraging the special needs community by checking out our website at risingaboveministries.org or by finding us on Facebook and Instagram. We look forward to connecting with you.